Aaron Rodgers wasn't the only thing Pittsburgh was waiting for.
They firmly believe that Aaron Rodgers will be their quarterback. Look, they're not stupid.
The U.S. Open heads just outside the Steel City.
We believe there are just certain places in our game where you stand on the first tee and you look out over the landscape, and it is just meant to play the U.S. Open. Oakmont is that place.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Spray.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Dirt and Spray on 1080.
The club prides itself on being America's greatest test of golf.
The Fan. In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Spray hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Spray is brought to you by Pelican Brewing, independently brewing on the Oregon coast since 1996. Discover even more flavors from your local coast with Pelican's new craft sodas. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
Hi, Pelican Brewing cracks open today's Daily Ticker with Pelicano. Discover Pelican's summer seasonal cerveza and drink in refreshment. The NBA draft, ladies and gentlemen, less than 2 weeks away.
So excited.
It's going to be here before we know it. What happens in the top 10? What happens at 11? Where does it all go? Who knows? But let's talk to somebody who might know. Jeremy Wu, at Jeremy Wu on Twitter. You can go give him a follow. NBA draft analyst and writer for ESPN, a good friend of the program. His latest mock and predictions with Jonathan Givony is out at ESPN.com, and you can find it on his Twitter account as well. Jeremy, good morning to you. Just from like a 30,000-foot view, How should Blazer fans feel about having the 11th overall pick? When I look at this crop of talent, because you never know, sometimes there's guys that rise and you're like, damn, he went fifth overall, or sometimes there's still guys that are available. But just from the general pool of players that the Blazers could be choosing from, how should fans feel about that pool of players?
Well, I think it's a pretty valuable pick. And I think the way I'm looking at the draft right now is I think we kind of have a rough idea of who the first, like, seven or eight picks will be in terms of players, not necessarily where they'll go. But after that, it opens up in a big way. And I think that's where it gets really interesting. And Portland's pick is right in the middle of that, where there are probably 8 to 10 guys, depending on eye of the beholder, who you could be in play there. And they all have very different skill sets, right? Like, no two guys do the exact same thing. So, that's one of the things I'm just very curious about with this draft generally, is just kind of in what order those things get prioritized, right? But I think that pick's valuable, and I think they're going to walk away with someone they're happy with at 11. Mm.
So if you say the top seven or six or whatever it ends up being is kind of calculated, is there one, and I'm kind of leading with this a little bit just because of the rumor mill stuff of reading about it, is there a name in this conversation that you think maybe it wouldn't surprise you that much if they fell out of that conversation of being a lock, of being in the top six or seven? Ace Bailey, an example, just to throw a name out there. Is there somebody that you think could end up slipping a little further than people think?
I mean, not necessarily the way I'm looking at it. I mean, I think Ace Bailey is someone who is a big variable in how this draft is going to go. I don't think that he will fall remarkably far. He may not go 3 or 4, but I don't think – I would be surprised if he went, 10 or 11. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But, I think guys like Bailey and Fears and Trey Johnson, Knipple and Molly Watts, like, those guys are probably gone by 11, right? The next group, Yakichonis, Derek Queen, Carter Bryant, those type of guys are probably, Yegor Demin. Like, some of those guys will be there at 11. Just process of elimination, some of them have to be, right? So I think it's not a bad spot in terms of knowing what you're working with.
Interesting. We're talking with Jeremy Wu, NBA draft analyst, on Twitter, at Jeremy Wu. Go give him a follow there. He's also a writer for ESPN. Latest mock-up with Jonathan Givony about where he thinks guys will go. And looking at that mock, you mentioned Yakichonis. That's who you have Portland taking. I'm curious just, what about his game stands out to you as you look at him? And then, we also have a little bit of PTSD out here, Jeremy, where we're taking a lot of guards in top 10 picks, man. And I know this isn't a top 10 pick, but we got a lot of guards on our roster. or are they all going to be here? He is another point guard, so is there any concern about the fit, or should that be, you know, not even a consideration for Portland considering where they're at and just who's the most talented player available?
Yeah, well, what I like about him as a fit is I think what he brings to the table is something, it's a different skill set, maybe than some of the other guards that Portland has. You know, it's one thing to have several players who play similar positions, but, you know, the skill set overlap is sort of what I'm looking at more when I'm thinking about this. And, you know, I live in Chicago, so I saw Illinois play a ton, so I probably have seen him more than anybody else, unfortunately. no, he's a very tough-minded, creative player. I think he has more than what he's shown in Illinois. You know, he had a huge role there, and I think did pretty well with it, but back to my point, I mean, just the I like the unselfishness that he brings. I think if you look at who's on the, you know, the guards Portland has, these guys are more scoring oriented, right? Like, you know, Anthony Simons is really a scorer by nature. Sharp is really a scorer. You know, Scoot is still more of, I think, a scorer than a playmaker. You know, I don't know what you know, how the front office is going to move forward in terms of who stays and, you know, what they decide, but I do think having a guy with the size that Jakachonis has, the unselfishness, and he can play both guard spots, right? He's big enough. He's 6'6". So I think that those type of players are sort of malleable and kind of easy to slot in. And I think he's a winning player. So I don't think it would be a bad fit.
We had a BYU guy on yesterday to talk about Yegor, and we had asked him straight up because he thinks Yegor's are just like a solidified point guard with amazing vision. Asked him about off ball, wasn't as confident about the off ball, thinks he's a really traditional point guard in that sense. How is Jakachonis? Like, if we put him in a lineup and we've got a Scoot out there, how do you envision that? Like, how does that work in your mind with him coming into Portland?
Yeah. I don't think that would be, excuse me, too big of a concern. I mean, I think I trust Kasparis, his shooting a little bit more than Yegor, just as a point of comparison. So, like, I think, you know, second side playmaking, most teams right now are rolling out multiple playmakers. I mean, the Pacers right now, a lot of time they have Halliburton and Nimhard out there together, right? Like OKC often, you know, Shea and Williams, they have like two or three guys in the court who can initiate the play, right? And that's kind of the way a lot of teams are playing right now. So, again, the size factor helps in the case of Jakachonis, right? Where at least, you know, he's big enough to maybe, you know, slow down a bigger player. At least it gives you more presence of size on the floor. Like that all matters. So, I could see that working.
You work with a guy that used to work with a assistant general manager of the Blazers. I'm just curious, like, Mike Schmidt's have a type when you think about mocking and you have an idea of certain teams and people making decisions that are important. Like, Mike Schmidt's reveals he kind of has a type and Jakachonis fits the type.
I mean, I have no direct insight into what Mike is thinking, although I'm sure it's smart thoughts. I could see it.
I want to ask you about a couple other guys because, you know, as you mentioned, you know, first 6-7 picks, we kind of know who they're going to be, at least. We just don't know exactly where they're all going to go. And then after that, it's a throw a dart at the board and let's see what sticks, right? And we've already listed a couple of names here. Carter Bryant is another one that has come up a lot for Blazer fans about his size, his athleticism. I think you and Gavoni both had him going 14 to San Antonio, so it's right there in that range of at 11 where Portland will be picking. What do you make of him, his strengths and weaknesses, and would 11 be a reach in your mind for Carter Bryant?
No, I think I would guess he's in play, you know, as they have these discussions there. You know, Carter Bryant, I think, has two really good things going for him. excuse me. One, just, you know, the skill set. Sort of, I know 3 and D is kind of cliche, but that's more or less like what he does. I think teams are optimistic about the shooting. I think his passing and overall feel is like maybe a little underrated. And defensively, you know, has a good defensive mindset. But the other thing is he has an amazing frame, right? So it's not just a, you know, it's a 3 and D guy, but here's a 3 and D guy who could legitimately, you know, maybe defend 2, 3, and 4, right? Because he's very strong and agile and has room to kind of keep improving. But like you see him in person, and it's like, okay, like I get it, right? He looks like you know, an NBA player. So you know, those two things together, I think, bode well for him. And yeah, he's not a guy who's gonna create offense, but I think he's a guy who's gonna be able to knock down a shot. add versatility defensively in terms of matchups. And that's kind of the type of player that's valuable anywhere, right? And in this class, there aren't that many guys like that. So I think he's benefited from that as well.
Is there somebody in that range, Portland's range, that maybe you're not as high on as the other names we've already mentioned?
I don't know if I would love like the, it's not that I'm not as high. It's just like, I don't know if I would love like the Derek Queen fit there. Like, I don't know if that makes total sense. Like, I think with Klingon, I think you'd want to have a second more agile guy on the floor. I think you wouldn't want to have two sort of bigger, slower guys. I don't know if I'd love that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in that range, Johan Berenger is a French defensive-minded center, really interesting young player. But again, with Klingon in place, like, I don't think you double down on a center at 11. So, yeah. But beyond that, I think it's kind of interesting because, like I said, these guys are all kind of different flavors, right? Like, they're all, this group talented, but they have different skills. So it's just kind of what they feel directionally with the roster, what they want to do, but none of these guys I think really duplicate what they have necessarily either. So it'll be very it's a team that's a little hard to peg at this early.
Well, I mean, on that point, Jeremy, I wanted to ask you on that because you mentioned some of the fit stuff. That's always an interesting debate I feel like we have every year going into the draft, especially for teams in Portland's position and kind of where they're at, of just what percentage breakdown is it just this guy's the best player available and we got to take him, and what percentage of it is this guy fits a need that we have, or we already have Klingon, or we already have guards, so we don't need necessarily that on our roster. Like, as you did from a philosophical standpoint, how would you view that?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think it depends. It's funny, like, we always talk about, do they need this? But a lot of that is just also internal evaluation, right? Like, it's not so much necessarily, do we need another guard, but it's like, is this guard better than the guards we have, right? Like, is he better than what we have? And I think that's usually the bigger question. And like, when I'm looking at the mock draft, I am trying to also ask that question, right? Like, put yourself in the shoes of the team. Like, is it an upgrade, right? And it's okay to, load up at certain positions if you think it's an upgrade. Is Portland far enough along in what they're doing to say, we need this specific role and we have to address it to the draft? Like, maybe not. But also, like, again, you don't want to cannibalize the minutes for a guy who you believe in. So I think what they do to some extent will also be a referendum on what's already on the roster, right? I mean, I think Kamara has been a good find. Like, Avdija had a really good season. Like, they made some good steps last year. So I'm genuinely curious what they feel is the way to go.
I know you cover a lot of pre-draft stuff. You go to the Combine. You're in Chicago. I'm just curious to get your thoughts of what you wrote or thought about these two guys versus what you've seen so far early in their careers, Shaedon Sharpe and Scoot Henderson. Obviously, there have been players in their own drafts that have performed better than them so far, but your thoughts on what you thought of Shaedon Sharpe and Scoot Henderson going into their respective drafts versus what you've actually seen from them here in Portland so far?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I think Sharp was always a tricky eval. Like, that year was an interesting test case just because he didn't play at all at Kentucky, right? I'm sure you remember. He ended up in the draft anyway because people were intrigued by him. So I think to get to where he is now, I mean, I'm not going to act like I watch, every single Portland game, so don't act like it. exactly how these guys are today, right? But I think that the progress he's made is probably not bad considering the level of experience that he had. He takes a little bit of time. He's been able to play through it. Certainly, you'd like the 3-point shooting to be better, right? I'm not looking at these percentages. Like, you'd like this to tick up, but I think it's sort of what you expected, right? I mean, a guy who was gonna take time. And often, got wing scorers just take time to kind of adjust to the speed of the NBA, make the right reads, and just learn to play team basketball. Because a lot of these guys, coming from lower levels, like, aren't asked to play roles. So that's a learning process. Scoot is someone who I saw a lot more of with G League Ignite. I think someone who I think there were probably higher expectations than, what he's necessarily shown the first two seasons. But I think point guards in particular can take a while. And it's kind of the same thing, right? Where, you know, maybe he benefits from if they get another ball handler and he doesn't have to be, you know, the full-time lead guard, right? Like I think he is still more of a scorer by nature. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I think there's more in there. I think there was a reason, you know, for the optimism coming in, and I would hesitate to write him off, but also it definitely has been slow, and I'm sure it hasn't been what everybody hoped for either.
Yeah, big year for both of those guys coming up. Jeremy Wu, ESPN. Go check out his great piece with Gavoni, breaking down the draft, where guys are going to go, where they think the best fit is for all those players. You can find it on his Twitter account as well as ESPN.com. At Jeremy Wu is where you give him a follow, man. Thanks. I'm sure you're busier in hell right now with the draft coming up two weeks away. You got a lot going on. Yeah. We genuinely appreciate the time out here in Portland, man, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you.
There you go. Jeremy Wu of ESPN. Yakachonis, do it for you?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of similar to Yegor in some ways, right?
Better shooter, he says.
Better shooter, more of a playmaker, doesn't have to be in one designated kind of slot, can go out there with whoever.
Kasparis is a cool name, too.
Kasparis Jakachonis.
That's a cool name.
It's very Blazery.
Very Blazery. We love our Eastern Europeans.
I think that's the tough thing is, like, any idea that there's only one dude you want is a ridiculous stance. There should be like four or five guys in this slot area that you should be eyeing. Derek Queen is one for me that's like very similar thought and feeling of don't do it. He could be a good NBA player, but I wouldn't understand the fit.
The fit thing, yeah.
You got to look at the way that they're built. I just kind of feel like if you're not going a Carter Bryant, a Coward, like you got to go a guy that can control and dribble the ball, right? Now, Yegor is different because he's more of just a point guard. Yeah. But if you go Jakachonis, assuming he's available, yeah, it would kind of fit exactly the way that they're building this thing. Pacers are a good team to point at, too, which are currently being constructed by two Portland guys.
Be nice to have those guys running the show, wouldn't it? Be kind of cool.
Yeah, we got our own guys.
That's all right. We got our guys.
Yeah.
I do want to ask that question, the fit versus best player available. It's a fascinating thing that we do every year in the draft because a lot of people are, I think, in your thought process and Jeremy Wu's thought process of like bigs don't, you just took a center with a top 10 pick. You have two other centers still on your roster. One of them is going to an expiring. One of them you might be trading at some point if you could ever stay healthy. So it's just interesting. Like I'm out on a center, I'm out on a big because we got those guys of just fit versus need. Fascinating. We got two more weeks to get into all of that. We got some positive changes coming to one sport. And where is the carnage? Lots still to get to. We're back after this on the Fam. All right, welcome back in. 8:23 on your Thursday morning. Starting to get these texts rolling in. Wanted to say I appreciate your show. Listen every morning on the way to work, but it's the last day of school and I'm a teacher. Thank you, and I'll see you in September. Bastard.
What are you doing? Why would
get
you stop?
Get your ass up and listen to the radio show.
You can also watch the show on replay on YouTube.
Yeah, what are you going to go on vacation or something? Who's got those?
God, what are you going to do? Vacuum in silence? What are you doing?
Put some yard work in silence? What are you going to mow your lawn, not listen to anything? Come still here, damn it. I'm jealous. I do find the fit versus need thing interesting for Portland. Like, I agree with the sentiment that you have on Derek Queen. Part of it is just, you know, him as a player, just wondering where the fit is as an NBA guy. But there is this thing, right, where you got a bit of a logjam at center and a bit of a logjam at guard. Now, maybe we get answers to both of those on the night of the draft. Mm. You might get Anfernee Simons traded. Maybe DeAndre Ayton's expiring has moved. I have no clue how it's all going to play out. But how much, if you're going into this draft, should fit versus best player available, where would you put the pie chart on each of those?
Well, but I yeah.
Because what, like, let me just throw an example at you.
Sure.
So you feel that way about Derek Queen. I think a lot of people would say that. What if through the pre-draft process, Derek Queen to you, as you're breaking it down, is the best player available? And that's what your scouts are telling you. That's what your eyes are telling you. You're the GM. Mike Schmitz is your draft guru. Yeah. And he tells you, this guy is the best player available at 11.
I am fundamentally, when you are in the draft, unless you have a rarity where you had a bad year and you got a draft pick, but you have all this talent coming back, I'm largely in the take the best player available camp.
Hmm.
That's just how I
operate.
Doesn't
matter what position. Doesn't matter if you got seven other guys at point guard. We're taking a point guard.
Now, drafting a center last year when you had two other centers on the roster and you weren't willing to trade both of them like that, yeah, that's a bit. If you would have told me that going into the Klingon pick, I'd have been like, what?
Yeah.
You want three centers, like three real traditional centers on this team.
Also, what's the long-term plan at that position, too? Because Ayton, again, expiring deal. Robert Williams is not going to be here long-term.
The long-term is Donovan.
And then it's Donovan Clingan.
So if you tell me, like, okay, but, like, I also would have felt weird if you would have reminded me they weren't going to make any move at all at that spot. I lean best player available. Who are you? You're a 36-win team. You won 21 games the year prior. You are not in a position to be acting like you're one specific thing away. Go get talent. That point blank. But I also don't. I don't know if I believe they would think Derek Queen is truly
the best player.
They might not.
They very well might not.
Yeah. And so that Yakachonis, like that kind of player, more fits what I think that they're aiming to do. And I am guessing on that. I didn't source base that.
No.
Just look at the roster. What are they touting the most? Kamara and Denny.
Length, size,
yes.
Switchability,
yes.
All of those things.
Yes. So I think if they're touting those the most, and they're still touting Scoot and Shade and Donovan, like they got Tiago Splitter on the staff, right? They got player development guy. I would say that their view is that those guys are the best, the most talented ones. So where I lean that you should always take the best player and not be like, well, positionally, you're not, you're a 36-1 team. Stop.
Yeah. Swag and agreement.
Well, for the most part, the only thing that Jeremy said towards the end was the only thing you have to, and this is where Cronin and Chauncey need to be on the same page, is if you have a high lottery pick, and because, what is it, after 3 years, you pretty much need to decide if you're going to pony up or not.
You're there with Shaedon Sharpe right
then
now.
Then there needs to be minutes available for that player to go in and have the opportunity to prove one way or the other worthy of that pick, or we missed. We need to come up with plan B. But, and that's only where, and I think the only two real positions that that exists at is center and point guard.
Everything else can kind of.
Everything else, that's up to the coach to mix and match. And as you said, that length and switchability. But those positions have some very specific functions within any sort of offense and defense that they have to serve. And you need to know that the skill sets are going to be up to NBA standards.
So if I told you Sacramento broke their streak a couple years back and it was a fun story to light the beam, right?
Light the beam.
If I told King fan you could go back and have Haliburton and De'Aaron Fox, would they say no? They're the same thing? Or would they say yes, multiple ball handlers, multiple playmakers and scores? Where do you think they would lean?
They would say they'd probably take them at this point because they don't seem to be heading in the right direction. Well, and Indiana's in the NBA Finals.
And Brian Windhorst reportedly saying the Kings are eyeing what position? Oh, point guard. Weird. You had two of them. You traded both. I just think, I think the Pacers and even the Thunder to a certain, they should be real eye-openers that this isn't set in stone, the idea of what you can have on your roster. Now, let me ask you guys this. What is the takeaway if they draft Yegor?
How many of the other guards are still on the roster on opening night? Is one of them traded? Then I'm fine
with
it.
Well, there's a random report from a guy.
To Swag's point,
that Ant wants to go, or that Ant is going to be.
I've heard that for, I mean, just
not Ant wants to go, but that like Utah and Orlando.
What makes Yegor different is at 6'9", what is his ability to defend at the other end of three?
What if it's not amazing?
But he's also from.
Then I'm really concerned.
Yeah. I mean, what we're being told, and you would know this because you watch more college hoops than we did, is that he is a traditional. I mean, he's a traditional point guard.
Yeah.
That, even though he's 6'9", that he has to have the ball in his
hands.
All
that's
fine
when he's
and dandy,
at his strength. But at 6'9", you better be able to switch over and guard a two or a three in the NBA. Because,
but he's also, what, 19?
Like, I know.
So I'm not going to put a lot of defensive expectation. I'm more like Ben Bagley saying he's got to be a point guard.
Yeah,
he's not an off-ball guy.
And that's why I asked the follow-up question. Like, this is to Swag's point,
but also,
this has been my issue, is that if you're using draft capital on guys, I have no problem if you think they're the best player available. And if that's your scouting is telling you, this is a 6'9" point guard, we think his shooting could get a little bit better, but he's got great sight, he can pass, he can do all this stuff. Maybe he's a plus defender as well on the other end of the floor. Having other point guard, like, it just doesn't make sense. So you don't have to draft for fit.
Well,
I still want
gone,
you to
does
take,
it make you feel better?
It does make me feel a little bit better.
The number
three
pick from 2 years ago is a point guard.
Well, yeah, and then I can bring this rookie off the bench and say you're the 11th pick. You don't have to start right away, but you could be a backup point guard. But if Anfernee Simons and Scoot Henderson are still on the roster and you draft a point guard with the 11th overall pick, explain to me how that makes sense.
Because those three guys, Ant and Scoot,
they're not going to play at the same time.
Yegor all have to have
but Ant
the ball. in order to utilize their best skills.
Who's your small forward,
and I don't think that computes into 48 minutes over the course of games.
Well, but Ant has played off ball. I'm not saying he's the best off ball.
I'm saying if you want to utilize their individual best skills, they're best when they have the ball.
Sure. Yes, especially Scoot. We know that about Scoot. He's not an
off ball
guy. He needs
to have the ball in his hands.
And you can't have too many of those guys to have to play 25, 30. Mm. It doesn't work.
Yeah, you're not good enough to just take for fit. I totally agree with that sense. There has to be a balance of if you're taking best player available and there is a logjam at that position, clear out the logjam.
Yeah, but they didn't do that at center.
No, they haven't done it at any position. They kept drafting guards and didn't trade any of them away. And they did it at center. Now, eventually, maybe they get there. Maybe this is the offseason again that they do it.
What if they get Yegor and then they announce an extension with Ant?
I want to see my blood pressure grow up today. Let's get to Carnage. Where's the Carnage? And welcome changes. All of that still to come in the next half hour. All right, welcome back in. 8:37. U.S. Open leaderboard look. Coming up in a moment, we got Game 4, the Stanley Cup Final. How does Blue Line Brandon feel about it tonight?
Hey, talk
about
say that. What you want, man. I'm on kind of a little.
You're 3-for-3 in the series so far.
I'm having a nice little run. I had a nice run last night. Pacers money line.
Did you actually gamble it?
Yeah.
How much did you win?
I bet $4.
Oh. Hey, $4. It's a winning bet. You got that going for you.
Small unit Sprague.
Small, you got that.
Checking in here.
Champagne and cigars at the Sprague household tonight.
We believe in little units on this show.
The funny thing is, I haven't really gambled on the hockey, and I've been running a nice little run on hockey.
You got a nice run going on right
now. What are we doing here?
I don't know. That's why we're going to ask you. Blue Line Brandon, what do we do?
Give me a minute to noodle.
Let's get to a couple of quick notes in a sport that one of us loves. The other ones tolerate, I would say. And does this make us tolerate it more or enjoy it more? Have you guys been following over the last 24 to 48 hours the rule changes coming to college basketball?
I've seen some of them. I saw the biggest one. I don't know if they've approved it?
So here's what's been approved so far.
College basketball is slowly winning me back with the NIL not going to the draft every year.
Better players sticking around
just
longer.
Just being more familiar.
Yeah.
So some of the rule changes at first, they have changed the challenge. So you now have a coach's challenge. So that's now a thing.
So that will be helpful. Because
we'll stretch the games out more,
but it's going to drag it out.
I'm sure it will. Timeout. Nope, timeout. Oh, we score a timeout.
They're taking away the under 2 minute constant reviews for out of bounds plays.
That's good.
That's now gone. So you're not every time you're going to go to the monitor.
The challenge. So if there's a crucial one and the coach is like, no, they screwed that up. We need the ball. He can challenge.
So
that's a better trade-off.
Yes.
It's not perfect, but that's a better trade-off.
You can now challenge out-of-bounds calls, goaltending, basket interference, as well as continuous motion on shot attempts and all that. So they've made slight little rule changes there. The next one has not been approved yet, but it seems like it is on the brink of happening. And this came out yesterday that they are quoting the NCAA as positive momentum in discussions towards moving the games two quarters from halves.
Thank goodness. Please do this.
I mean, welcome to the women's basketball version of college hoops. It's taken you forever to get on board with it.
It's always been the funniest thing that women... Has women's hoops always been quarters?
No.
They used to be
halves. But they made the change.
He nailed a 20-foot bogey putt.
That is one of the most insane bogeys I've ever seen from Rory McIlroy.
He needed that in the worst possible way.
He hit a shot 10 feet on that hole and somehow made a bogey.
I can't believe he just hit that putt.
The putt was
that was one of the worst holes of his career.
That was longer than the second shot that he hit on that hole, or a third shot, whatever shot that was. That was insane.
Can I give you my golf take?
He is still alive. That was a hole form that could have ended his chances this weekend.
No,
and he just bogey.
I'd be curious to see the afternoon round. Okay, this has long bothered me. When you're in a group, say us three are golfing, and say we're at Stone. Okay,
right.
Stone has, you know, rough off fairway that they let grow a little high. You hit into it. You're 10 yards off the fairway, okay?
Yeah.
We don't always find that ball. We're like, I saw where it landed, but you don't always find it. I have always found as an amateur golfer, I find it so incredibly dumb that I have to take a stroke penalty, but these dudes get 9 ball finders in every tournament. And so my theory is, if the collective group says Swag hit 10 yards off a fairway, but this course is trying to collect golf balls so they can resell them, I think we collectively say that shouldn't be a drop. Just drop back, and you're not dropping and hitting with a stroke penalty. you should get some relief in that way, because we all saw it. It should be a playable shot, but this course is trying to resell golf balls because you could throw some Pro V1s in that group and charge two for one.
You got people in the trees, gremlins in the trees that come down and snag your Kirkland.
I think a lot of courses do this. Hey, that was my ball. Hey, I remember losing this a month ago.
That was my ball.
So it's an idea. If they don't have to have penalties off the fairways because somebody says, got it, we should collectively agree and say, just like we say, you're good on a putt, we should be able to say, nah, you shouldn't have a penalty for that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not even that hot of a take. If I'm playing in like a Northwest Golf Guys tournament, I will count the stroke because that's technically what you have to do and it's a tournament setting and I'm not going to, you know, abuse the rules in that. But if I'm people get so butthurt about, you know, playing golf rules when you're just playing like a random Saturday round with your buddies.
Well, I know, but these kind of scenarios involved, you don't want to like,
dude, these kind of scenarios, as long as I know that I saw the ball hit the ground.
Yes,
like, it's one thing if you hit into some trees and you're like, dude, that could have ricocheted any direction and I don't know where it went.
Yes.
But if I see the ball land, run off the fairway, or I know it's in this general area, I won't count that as a
stroke. Or some of the places you're kind of up on a hill, like Tri Mountain has this, other places where there's like long fescue.
Yes.
But you know, you saw it, it went in, it went right there, and it's snarled in some, you know, hunk of grass somewhere that you can't see.
Yeah.
Just drop one. Let's go. I
had this in our round. Not that it was the most serious round of my life with Terry at Creekside. I hit in an area and quite literally I just couldn't find the ball.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like it was that long a grass, but we just couldn't find the ball.
Sure.
And I'm like, this is dumb. I got to take a stroke penalty for this. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I had one of those when we were playing at Oregon City a couple of weeks ago with Lishka. And I was just off the fairway. And then I think I ended up figuring out, because these kind of things happen, I was playing a yellow ball at the time,
mm-hmm.
and there was an old guy who was on the adjacent hole,
yeah. And
all of a sudden we get down. I'm like, dude, my ball was right here. It's par five. I had a great drive. Yeah. I got to look in to get on the green and two, and I can't find my ball anywhere. Eventually, I'm just like, whatever. I guess I'll just drop. Hit a good shot, and then as we get down closer towards the green,
old guy picked it up.
I look over, and the old guy's hitting a yellow ball.
Yeah.
And I saw another yellow ball in the rough, and I'm like, oh, there it is. I thought I hit it further than that, and I went back, and I was like, that's not my ball.
Yeah.
And he hit my ball. And so in that scenario, I'm not counting that as a penalty stroke.
No.
That's not counting against me.
And I wouldn't be mad at you for not
counting
it.
I hit the ball slightly off the fairway, and some slappy hit my golf ball because he can't bend down and look at what ball he's hitting.
I remember this
moment.
Not
my fault.
Swag, it was like the scene in Joe Dirt when he's at the carnival. And the guy gets mad and he's like, yeah, you better run away. And it's an old guy carrying an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
I was like, you better run. Yeah.
You better.
Wrapping up the college basketball men going to quarters.
Quarters, yeah.
The devil in the details will be because what the women do on the fifth team foul in a quarter goes into the bonus, but there's no more one and ones. So when in the women's game, when you go into the bonus, they're all two-shot free throws. That will be one of the little sticking points of college coaches. Do they still want to have a one-and-one situation at some point? So to take advantage of teams that suck at free throw shooting, and there's a lot of them in college basketball,
there are.
Should they be penalized, or does it just go to two shots and let's keep things flowing?
Interesting. Mm. That's a good point. I didn't
so
even think
those,
about
it. Those are a couple of little things. Going to quarters, yes. I don't think anybody, they don't care. It's those little details.
Can we advance the ball, too, if we're going to quarters?
Advance
can
the
we
get ball that? With timeouts late
yeah,
in quarters.
The women get to advance the ball.
That's just easy, easy fix. You do
is
it on one side?
If they do that,
I've not seen that reporting, no.
If they have advanced the ball then and they've just extended the game longer,
exactly.
They've not
they
done just, anything.
Because that's what FIBA does now, like Olympics and the international play. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Pretty
easy fix. We'll see if they do it. Hey, Dirt, hit more fairways. You know what? Why don't you hit more fairways, all right? I hit a lot of fairways over here.
Dare you.
I have a buddy just started playing golf and he's like obsessed and he recently posted his grint
and I said 100% fairway accuracy and I pretty confident he had no idea you could dictate.
Yeah, you can label what you're hitting here
because I've watched him golf and he's a new golfer. And
he's
like,
not hitting a lot of fairways.
100%.
That's a lot of fairways hit, man.
A lot of
fairways. Dude, you're hitting 100% of your fairways. You're feeling fantastic. Nothing worse than that. I have lost balls in the fairway before. I don't know if it's plugged, if it ran
out
somehow.
I've had that happen.
Like, I've had that where you hit a ball dead straight and you walk out there and you're like...
And it's plugged.
So we're in agreement.
Where the hell is my golf ball?
We're agreement here.
That's not a controversial take at all. I do that. If I'm playing a random round with my buddies on a weekend and I hit a ball that's in play, I'm not counting that as a penalty stroke. And I know it's in play. I used to play golf balls with my name on them, which I've since stopped doing in case, you know, off the course break something. Probably not a good idea for a golf ball that says Dirt. And I had a round at Stone Creek that was actually a pretty good round, but I had to take a penalty stroke on 13 the you know, up and down with the little creek in the middle of it. And I couldn't find my, I was down along the trees, kind of hooked it down there. 2 days later, no joke, I had a listener tweet me a picture of my golf ball. I was like, I found it on 13. I was like, dude, can I get that stroke back? I want that stroke. It was in play.
You had to count the stroke.
If I would have had a ball finder there, he would have put a little flaggy down and I would have played that tee shot, damn it. There you go. Hey, how about the carnage and game four of the Stanley Cup final? We'll wrap it up next on The Fan. Apologize for getting fired up about golf conversations. It can happen.
I just, it's long bothered me, and I'm a crappy golfer. This isn't going to change my handicap that much. It's just the...
I can't find people to play golf with anymore. I'm out of golf. You guys want to play on Saturday?
Haven't been asked.
You want to play? You want to play golf?
I actually don't have a tee time this weekend, but you've asked too late. We're going to the coast. I wanted to play this weekend. My wife's like, are you going to go play golf for Father's Day weekend? And I'm like...
It's Father's Day weekend. Cancel your coast trip. You don't need to go to the coast. Who wants to go to the coast?
I haven't seen a coastal sunset in too long.
How about a sunset on a golf course? How about that? How's that sound?
Where are you playing?
You know where I'm playing.
Yeah.
You know
where
I'm
playing. You got a tee time there?
I got a tee time. You want to play?
What time?
12:20.
Oh, that's a nice tee time.
Right in the middle, right in the heat of the day.
I love the heat.
Right in the heat of the day.
Get the old
it's not even going to be that hot. I think it's only like 75.
It's not that. It's the hops are here, so I have a...
What time you got to be there?
He's out.
I have to be there at 4:30.
Yeah, the round's not going to end until 4:30. You didn't ask me. You don't ask. You ask late. You ask your 95 best friends in your group chat.
I've only asked like five, and they've all said no. I can't find anybody to play golf with, man. I don't have any golf buddies left anymore.
What's the limit of friends that make you wonder about somebody? I'm not saying it's you. I know people, though, that legitimately, they tell me they have like 15 friends. I'm like, that's not possible.
Dude, I got like three. I mean, I got more than that, but you know what I mean. Like, it's not that. I got a lot of group chats that I'm in, that kind of stuff. But, like, people I don't see my friends ever. We don't ever do anything.
One of your friends will randomly text me, and he texted me this past weekend. Hey, I'm playing softball in North Portland. You want to come watch? What? Why would I?
Come watch.
Why would I go watch?
Your old stomping ground.
Rec softball.
What's the matter with you?
In North Portland.
Go support my buddies, damn it.
Where are you playing? By the St. John's Bridge. Why would I do that?
There are, I believe, what, five guys under par right now? Is it longer than that? Seven? Eight guys under par?
Eight under par.
JJ Spahn, four under, is your leader. Pretty good leaderboard so far. Spieth's in the mix. Rory's still in the mix. If you're just even, if you just shoot even today, you're going to be fine. Just shoot even par. Find your way into Friday. You'll be okay. It's going to rain a little bit.
Speaking of golf, don't forget June 24th.
Yes.
Fan Golf Classic. Brought to you by your local Toyota dealers.
Yes, it is.
Henderson
very few
and Daughter Windows.
Foursomes left for the morning round. It's almost
Philbrook
sold out.
Law accident. Victor Rico's Matt's Barbecue. My God. 1080thefan.com.
Live bet tonight. If Edmonton takes an early penalty, then just
ready for Blue Line Brandon
on the Panthers.
Blue Line Brandon.
Blue Line Brandon. Where are you going?
Oilers. Oilers, they're going to rebound. They've had two bad ones. They let game two slip.
Are we going little wing or big hog? You can get plus money on the Oilers probably going into tonight.
Go little wing.
Little wing tonight?
Little wing.
That's all right.
I'm a little wing non-football season guy.
That'll do it for us, folks. If you missed the show, go check the podcast, 1080thefan.com. Matt Durden's breaking out 1080 The Fan. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. We love you all. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Colin is next. Listen to 1080 The Fan.